and welcome aboard the Battleship Retention. I am Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening. David?
Yes.
How you doing?
I don't know. I'm trying to think what's going on right now in the world, other than what we're actually talking about this episode.
Right.
I'm just trying to tie it into something. But I got nothing going on.
I got in a car accident yesterday.
How about that?
Didn't care for it.
Yeah.
My first one in like 20 years. And so now, and I'm fine. The other driver is fine. The real hell is going to have to be dealing with insurance companies. So, and I can't drive my car, my beloved Kia Soul. I need a new door.
So. Well, I, knock on wood, I'm assuming this is wood. Our table is definitely not.
Right, yes. No, this we got from Target. This is an old house, so that's probably wood.
That's wood of the, yeah. I, knock on wood, have never been in a car accident to the extent that I needed to involve insurance. I got rear-ended once on Santa Monica. But we were just like, yeah. Traffic was already going 3 miles per hour, so we pulled into the right. Parking lot at Santa Monica and Van Ness, you know, the Little Caesars is, and the car wash, or the car wash, the laundry, laundromat over by the cemetery. Anyway, I like details. It's very specific details. And I got out, and the guy was like so apologetic. I looked at my car, and I was like, this is fine. I don't want to deal with this. Let's just go.
Yeah, this accident was my fault.
Tell me what happened.
So I was turning. You want details?
Or can you not talk about a
pending investigation?
Pending investigation. That's the word.
I think it's probably fine. I was turning onto Fountain from Kenmore. So you were headed south,
or you were headed north?
I was headed north.
And you made a...
I turned left. I had a stop
sign. So you're headed west on Fountain at this point.
That's right. Well, at least that was the plan.
Okay.
I don't think I ever actually got there, at least not the way I wanted. And so I had a stop sign. The people on Fountain did not. And I was looking right, and I was driving for Lyft at the time, and I had gotten a notification that, hey, someone's waiting. Uh-huh. So I was like, well, I better hurry up. I looked right already. No need to look left. Uh-huh. That's not true. It wasn't a totally blind corner, but like I definitely, by the time I saw this person, it was too late. And it is really true that when people say that time like slows down, and you're shocked how many thoughts you can have in just a few seconds. Like I was turning, saw the car coming, and just the thoughts were like, oh wow, hey, there's a car there. And then just like, oh, I better pull forward so she misses me. Oh wait, no, I don't think she's gonna miss me. I'm about to have a car accident. Oh, here we go. Like all of that in, you know, 2 seconds. Uh-huh. And then it hit, and I was very apologetic, and then she was very nice about it, and everything was fine. Nobody was yelling, which was nice. I was able to at least drive the car home, even though I had to get out on the passenger side. Yeah.
Wait, this poor person still waiting somewhere west on Fountain for you to pick them up? Did you cancel the ride?
I was wondering why my rating was so low. I did think to cancel it shortly after I got in I caused a car accident. But there is a piece of my car that is probably still on Fountain, just a little plastic strip on the side of my door.
Wait, this was today?
This was yesterday.
Yeah, I was there this morning. I didn't notice it.
All right, keep an eye out.
All right.
Because I think my insurance company might want me
you
to.
You usually have a pretty good lay of the land when I'm driving down any street. Don't want to see any spare car parts.
This is a dumb conversation.
We have a guest who's waiting so patiently for us to get through our ads.
Yeah.
So let's get through those ads.
Look, it is a privilege and an honor to talk about these. We don't get through them. Uh-huh. We revel in them. That's what I say.
Look, we like our sponsors. We wouldn't support something that we don't support, endorse.
There we go. Right? That's true. Yes.
So our sponsors are great.
Yes.
In fact, I'll be talking about the fact that I use a sponsor.
Yeah. So this episode, we'll start off with this one. This episode is brought to you by Mubi. a curated online cinema that brings its members a handpicked selection of the best independent, international, and classic films. Every day, movies curators introduce a new title, and you have 30 days to watch it. That means there's always 30 wonderful films to enjoy, all for only $8.99 a month. Plus, when you use their mobile apps, you can download films to watch offline. Currently available on Mubi is Berlin, Symphony of a Great City, directed by Walter Ruttmann. This is the first in Mubi's four-city series of documentaries dedicated to the personalities and energies of unique urban centers. Ruttmann's 1927 film explores the Weimar-era Berlin, with a style heavily influenced by Soviet filmmakers like Sergei Eisenstein and Ziga Vertov. So check out Mubi to see where they go next. There will be three more cities over the course of the next several weeks. I know already because I checked into it. But there is a special offer for listeners of Battleship Pretension. You can try Mubi free for a month. Just go to Mubi.com, that's MUBI.com/Battleship to redeem now, or just go to BattleshipPretension.com and click on the Mubi ad on the left-hand side.
And I want to tell you about TweakedAudio.com, which is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. Tyler and I both use them each and every day of our lives. Mm-hmm. Today, I was listening to a band I want to tell you about. They're called Trappist. They're a beer-themed hardcore band. They sing
have to be.
Exclusively about beer.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is one of the guys who's the founder of the Grill 'Em All burger truck. Do you know Grill 'Em All?
Oh yes.
Yeah. So they do metal themed burgers. This is a metal band that sings about beer, and they did a new song with the guy, the singer from Municipal Waste and Iron Reagan, who are both bands that I love. So that's what I was listening to on my TweakedAudio.com earbuds today. Trappist sounded great. Mm-hmm. Thanks to the fellows at Tweaked Audio. These earbuds are available at a low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, I almost forgot to mention this part.
Yeah,
you get one third off that low cost, and no shipping charges. So go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Tyler?
Yes?
Changes are afoot.
Yeah.
Big things are happening.
Yeah.
It's going to have an effect on us, whether we like it or not,
mm-hmm.
Because of our chosen... I don't know.
Yeah.
Because of our calling, because of our vacation.
It's going to have a bigger impact on me because you never take part in the Oscars episode.
That's right. I'm at a point in my life where if watching award shows wasn't something that I enjoyed doing with my wife, I don't think I'd watch the Oscars anymore.
We'll unpack that in a moment, actually.
I think last year, until the day of, I forgot it was the Golden Globes, and then Natalie was like, "Oh, we should watch the Golden Globes tonight." I have gotten farther and farther away from award shows, but we're not going to talk about this just the two of us.
Right.
The listeners have already gotten way too much Los Angeles minutia. We're not going to sit here and talk about how they're shutting down Hollywood Boulevard from Highland to Orange for the Oscars, and how that's a pain in the ass every year.
I just avoid it. I just stay here at home.
Sometimes you just gotta get through Hollywood.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta get to that IHOP.
Here's a fun thing. Just because I see that we've been going for almost 8.5 minutes, I want to try and make it a full 10 before our guest speaks.
See, I am.
So, so I think
I mean, I could just name streets. Some
sure.
More, right?
Absolutely.
Gardner
is a good one.
Sure. Poinsettia.
Yeah. Yeah. Genesee.
Yeah, these are all streets that are west of the Kodak Theater, the Dolby Theater, on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. DeLongpre.
DeLongpre is south.
Yeah.
Yeah. DeLongpre runs parallel to Hollywood.
That's
DeLongpre
right.
runs just behind the Arclight. Arclight is, of course, between Selma and Vine on the east and west, and Sunset and DeLongpre on the north and south.
That's right.
All right, are we done with this?
I like the DeLong pre-entrance. No, the point is, what I was going to say is that... So I finished, as I said last week, I finished teaching my my students from Italy. And so when I was, and part of their trip.
I said someone when I meant Ivar. Sorry. It was, okay. It's Ivar.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead. you noticed that. The guest noticed. Selma, of course, is also on East West Street, just one block north Indeed. Of Sunset Boulevard.
That's correct, yes.
What an embarrassment.
Okay, so this is the kind of episode this is going to be. It's good to know. It's always good to know.
You
anyway,
decided to.
Right. I know, but but now I got to hurry up because I wanted to talk right at 10.
Okay, well, you meant to start the intro.
I haven't told my story yet. So
introduce the guest.
Okay, all right. Our guest writes for LA Times, right? And I want to make sure it's Katie Walsh.
Hi.
9:59.
Yes.
But of course, the listeners have the theme music at the end, so none of this time code means anything to them anyway. Thank you so much for sitting through that.
No, it was wonderful.
Complete nonsense.
It was wonderful. One, I'm going to listen to Trappist as soon as I get in the car. Two, how dare you mix up Ivar and Selma?
I know.
Three, I also use the DeLong pre-entrance.
Yeah. It's,
it's the classier entrance.
Yeah, it's never busy.
No.
Can I tell you why I mix up Selma and Ivar?
Yes.
So Wayne Kramer, not the film director, but the musician from the MC5, put out a solo album in the 90s called Dangerous Madness on Epitaph. And there is a song, I think it's the last song on the album, it's like an 11-minute long song. And part of the motif of the song is he keeps naming Hollywood intersections that aren't, or Los Angeles intersections that aren't like Sunset and Vine or Hollywood and Highland. Like he's naming sort of the back streets. And so he names Selma and Ivar. And so because I listened to that
Popped
album constantly when I was a high schooler, because I was very with it and popular listening to the solo album of the guy from the MC5 in high school. I always do get Selma and Ivar mixed up. But yeah, that's
that's fine. We'll allow it. It's a good reason.
Okay.
So I will finish my story, but I'll actually throw it out to both of you because, so part of the class that I was teaching, involved the kids taking trips to various places around the city, when they were done, you know, acting like they were listening to me. And so I would say, you know, where are you guys headed today? And one day they said, oh, we're going down to Hollywood. And I said, oh, are you excited? They're like, oh, it's going to be great. And I was just like, it's really not.
Yeah.
It's really not.
It's like Times Square, but yucky.
Yeah. It's basically just like, everything neat about Hollywood is on the ground, whether it be like the handprints or the Walk of Fame. And it just got me thinking that, like, if you were to ask me before I lived here, and I don't remember where you're from, Katie.
I'm from St. Croix in the Virgin Islands.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I was going to say, how do you forget that?
Yeah, okay.
Because we always ask first-time guests where they're from,
right.
And that's one of the most memorable.
Yeah. That's true, yes. And so if you were to ask me, like, before I moved here, like, are you going to live near Hollywood? I'd be like, what? I can't afford that.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, Hollywood is a little bit expensive, but not for any particular reason that I can tell, except that it's just called Hollywood.
Yeah.
But it's just, have you guys run across when talking to, like, relatives or friends back home, and if you mention Hollywood as just another neighborhood, have you ever encountered this? I had this with my mom once.
Yeah.
Where they feel like, oh, you're talking about the place where all the movie stars are.
Right.
Yeah. I've had a couple, like, friends. Like, I had a friend who had never been to LA who was like, oh, I want to go to Hollywood. And I was like, no, you don't, girl. Like, no. And I think I drove her and took her to Amoeba and, like, the Arc Light and was like, look, there's some things on the ground. And that was about it. Because I was like, I don't want to walk around Hollywood Boulevard. It's really grimy.
Yeah.
And then also, like, my sister was visiting and she hasn't spent a lot of time in LA either. And I would sort of, like, quickly drove her through and was like, that's it. We're not going to get out of the car. Like, so yeah, I know, but it people say, ooh, Hollywood, and you're like, it's not really as nice as you think.
Yeah, although it has, I mean, it has definitely, Hollywood as a neighborhood has definitely gentrified in the 13 years that I've, because when I first moved here 13 years ago, almost exactly, I lived in Hollywood, and I lived, like, because the Walk of Fame goes all the way to Gower.
Yeah.
We're getting specific again. But, like, it goes way further east from, like, Hollywood and Highland is, like, thought of as the center, but the Walk of Fame goes forever.
Yeah.
And now when you go down to, like, to like Hollywood and Vine. You've got like the W Hotel there that wasn't there when I moved here.
Yeah.
And like a bunch of like gastropubs and stuff. That
nice restaurants. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it used to crack me up to think that like people were just walking from Hollywood Highland, where at least there's the theaters and the, like the Chinese and the Egyptian and the people in costume, and just walking past like endless like taco shops and Pep Boys, like just, just to find Ernst Lubitsch's name somewhere.
Right. I'm going to a screening at the Egyptian tomorrow night, and I'm like, I want to get a drink afterwards, and I'm like, oh, where am I going to go? Hollywood on a Friday night? What am I thinking? Like, I'm excited for the movie, but I'm also just like, oh man, like, do I have to go to that weird dive bar around the corner from the Egyptian, which is kind of fun, but you know.
Wait, which one is that?
I'm going to the screening.
Yeah, no, which dive bar?
Oh, Bordner's.
Oh, Bordner's. Okay. Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. But it's like not great. It's fine.
I've had I can't remember if this is a conversation we've had on the podcast before, but I have, I have said multiple times that Pig and Whistle is the worst bar that I regularly find myself at.
Because I don't think I've even been to
because
it.
Because it's next to the Egyptian.
Yeah. And like, okay, maybe I'll go there.
It's
horrible.
If it weren't for the fact that it's been there forever, it has history, and it's just a great location, mm-hmm. there's no way it would still be there. It's the service is terrible. The food, God, I haven't eaten there in forever, but don't eat there. The food is so bad. But I was just there like last weekend. I was saying, my wife and I went to... they did a whole evening of film, like silent films by Lois Weber.
Oh, cool. I should have gone to that, damn.
Yeah. And so, but the third one they showed was, it was just like three of the seven reels of the movie that they had only restored, like three of them mm-hmm. or whatever. And my wife and I were like, this thing's already three and a half hours long.
Right.
We're going to sit through a partial movie. So we just went to the Pig and Whistle and had a drink
right.
and then came back for the last movie.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
So I'm constantly like, with the TCM Fest and AFI Fest, I'm constantly at the Pig and Whistle and always thinking like,
what am I doing here? Yeah.
But yeah, maybe I'll go to Bordner's.
Go to Bordner's. It's around the corner and it's kind of weird, but it's fine. It's totally doable. It's like just a dark divey bar. And then, I have not had food there though.
Okay.
But there's an Italian restaurant right there. That's like,
yeah, I can pick
kind
the
of,
sign.
Kind of also a little bit bad, but doable, but also Musso and Frank is there. So maybe I'll go get a drink at Musso and Frank. I don't want to eat there, but I don't know. We'll see.
And what movie are you going to see?
I'm seeing Wanda, the Barbara Loden movie. Yeah, it's like a movie that's basically been lost to time, and they restored it. And she was an actress in the 70s and made this very proto indie movie with like three people, like no crew. And I guess they just restored it, and they literally are screening it three times in LA. I think it got a week long run in New York, but they screened it last weekend and then Saturday and Sunday at the Egyptian. So yeah.
I just saw the Meg, so I feel like I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I also was on YouTube today defending the Meg, so I'm team Meg.
I kind of am, too.
I'm actually team Statham and Shark. Like, Statham and anything.
And that whole ensemble. They're all a lot of fun. I enjoy them. Although, I do think that they just did not know what to do with Rainn Wilson's character. They're like, so is he, like, a cool billionaire? Is he super greedy?
Yeah. You need where to stand on him.
Yeah. But anyway.
Well, maybe it will win Best Popular Film.
Oh, that's a good... there we go. Can I say, look at that. Are you a professional
podcaster?
Not to
toot my horn. That was going to be my segue. I had it locked and loaded.
Locked and loaded. I stole it right out from under you.
And if you had said it, David, I would have been so furious. But you know what? I'm excited that our guest could just fit right in with this ridiculous dynamic. So yes, okay, that is what we are talking about today. And then I actually wanted to have a larger conversation than that, which is the idea of like, how do we quote unquote fix the Oscars, you know? But we'll get to that in a moment. So, all right. So this was announced. So we're recording on a Thursday. It was announced yesterday that the Academy Awards, the ceremony itself, they're making some changes to it. They want to keep it to 3 hours, and then they will still, as far as the evening itself, as far as the event itself, they're still going to present awards to like smaller, lesser known categories. But that will happen during commercial breaks, and they're not going to televise that.
I think they're going to edit like a montage.
Yeah. Okay, yes.
And they'll show it like when they come back.
Okay.
But so it'll be just like quick, like, here are all the sound designers.
Yeah.
Can I say about that? The I mean, there are other problems, but I would say the solution to that is, in addition to the telecast, do a live stream, right?
So totally, there people, yeah.
So that people who care about seeing those speeches in full can just watch them during the commercial.
I also feel like a live stream would be fun in general because you could, like, see people moving around and talking to each other during the commercial breaks because there is a little bit of action. Mm-hmm. That happens.
You gotta see the seat fillers come in and out.
Yeah, yeah.
I could see the Oscars not wanting to do that though, because they want to like keep the sheen.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, every it's a fun production. Right. You save that shit for the Golden Globes.
Right.
Then I just could see that being.
Then just keep, if that's the problem, then just keep the live stream focused on the podium on the dance.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the inner
session. Run banner ads underneath it or whatever you need to do. Like for people who want to see the full speech for best sound effects editing, which is me.
Well, sometimes the winners of like those, I don't mean to say smaller categories. We all know what I mean when I say that. Like that, categories that
that's
people,
like below the line. Is that below the line?
Yeah,
below the line. Can you consider that?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while, there's like a really touching moment there.
Yeah.
And at the very least, it's this idea that if you are a sound designer and you've been nominated for an Oscar, it's very exciting. And yes, you know that people don't care as much about your category as they do best actor, but your parents do,
your friends and family.
Yeah. And this could be your moment. And now they have to not even tune into a live stream because they don't have that. They have to watch a highlight. So now I just imagine a lot of very histrionic sound designers, like when they win, they make these big, they have these big speeches so that it makes the montage.
Oh, that's a good point.
Oh, right.
I mean, also it's like all of those people like spend their days in dark rooms, like let them out into the sunlight for one night. Like
they are notably paler than the others.
The other thing you'd miss out on, do you remember a few years ago, there was a short film, because I guess you're supposed to pre-approve who, if you have more than one person nominated in your whatever, who is going to go on stage.
Yeah.
Right. And there was that woman who would like had a falling out with the like her co-directors maybe she was a producer and she was like at the Oscars, but she was specifically not supposed to come on stage if they won, and she like stormed the stage and gave a speech. And like the other two co-directors are like standing behind her, like looking that look on their face, like it's the same look on their face that Mike Myers had when Kanye West said George Floyd
just like care about black deer people. In the headlights.
So, I mean, obviously that change is, so that's a change that I think is meant for time, like, you know, to compress the ceremony a little bit. But I think the bigger change is the one that I've been hearing people like spout off about, which is the addition. Okay, I want to see if I've got this correct.
I feel like nobody knows. Like, it's total mystery because they did not explain it.
They named the category, but they haven't explained the criteria.
It's not most. It's like best popular movie.
Right.
Not so most popular stupid. Movie.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm already showing my card now.
That's fine.
Oh, I think we all agree it's pretty stupid, right? I thought we were just starting there.
I did read an article in Time, you know, Time Magazine online or whatever, that featured Monica Sandler, who was on, you weren't here unfortunately, but she I went to school with her and she's an Oscar historian. And so
we should have her on the show.
Yeah, she should be your guest tonight. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's, are you kidding me? Like, she's got Time Magazine reaching out to her. She can't be dealing with no BP. And she did point something out that is something I was that I was aware of, that at the very first Oscar ceremony there were two best pictures.
That's right.
One of them was like not most artistic, but like best artistic picture, and that went to Sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, actual best picture, which is not what they called it, went to Wings.
I believe.
So she pointed out that, like, there is, admittedly many years ago, but there is precedent for the kind of separating of the two. But
there's probably a lot of other things from the 1920s that we shouldn't be bringing back today.
Not following it. So I thought that was interesting, and that put things slightly into perspective for me, but not very much. So let's all just take time to talk about how much we think this is dumb.
I think it's when you said, I don't understand what the parameters are.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't say anything about what, right. Does the Academy vote on it? Does it have to like earn a certain amount of box office? Like right. Nobody knows what it even means. It's just like a dumb name.
Yeah. And And also, Get Out was nominated for Best Picture last year. Like,
yeah.
It made $100 million.
Yeah, big popular studio movies don't, like, get shut out. Mad Max won every fucking award.
Dunkirk was nominated, won a bunch of awards, you know. I feel like, and even the smaller ones like Your Shape of Water, like, those make good money for art house release or Fox Searchlight type of movie.
And I think, I mean, it seems to me that the Academy is trying to court an audience that they've already lost. I think the people they're trying to court aren't going to watch the Oscars.
Well, I was reading an article today in preparation for this because I prepare that ABC had been putting pressure on them.
Yeah.
Which also, ABC is owned by Disney, which owns everything.
Yeah. Most notably, in this instance, Marvel.
Yeah.
Because everyone is saying that this is the Black Panther Oscar.
Right. And I can't help it.
Which, like, by the way, controversial statement here, Black Panther is the third best Marvel movie of 2018.
What are the other two?
Infinity War and Ant-Man 2.
Disagree.
Infinity War is obviously the best of the three. With Black Panther a distant second, and then for me, Ant-Man, I forgot that it was that it came out. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But yes,
it is really neither there. But I shouldn't have said it, and I'm going to get emails.
The whole reason that the Oscars went to a possible 10 nominees was to accommodate the popular movies.
Right.
And they did, by the way.
And then they did.
District 9.
Yeah.
Nominated for Best Picture, which is crazy.
It was funny because, of course, the next year, Avatar was going to be nominated no matter what. Mm-hmm. And that was the most popular movie of that year. But then they just, then the Oscars kind of started to tail off a little bit. And aside from the occasional Pixar nomination.
Yeah.
It does feel like.
You say
like,
occasional, you mean Toy Story 3. Were any other Pixar nominated for Best Picture?
I think Inside Out was.
Well, I think that was animated. I don't think it got a Best Picture nom. But yeah, we can fact check that. Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing, it's funny that you guys asked me to be your guest because I'm a little bit of a wild card when it comes to the Oscars.
Oh,
I have opinions. I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying things. No, I'm just very cynical about the Oscars. I'm not very precious about them. I know a lot of people are, you know, like they take it very seriously. And honestly, prognosticating the Oscars is big business. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the for your consideration ads, like that makes websites a lot of money. I just think the Oscars are awards for marketing. I don't think they're awards for merit. I think that sometimes it lines up. Merit and marketing lines up. But I just think it's the campaigning and all of that stuff. I'm just like, it's not the best movie of the year, but also art is subjective and all of that. So it's weird to like even put these movies in competition with one another. But on the one hand, I'm like, this is so dumb. On the other hand, I'm like, who cares? Like, let them do whatever stupid thing they're going to do. I just think if they're like, oh, we're losing ratings, this is not the way to do it. I don't think making the award show shorter, I don't think people who are not watching the Oscars now are going to be like, ooh, they made it shorter. Like, I'm going to tune in. Right. Or like the fact that they'll have like the entire cast of Black Panther and Infinity War on the red carpet, which they probably would have had them on the red carpet anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference.
I don't think anything's going to make a difference at this point. And incidentally, Inside Out was not nominated for Best Picture, but Up was.
Oh, okay.
So, So for in a way I'm bummed because of course this episode would fit much better in our January our just general awards coverage slot. Well, but you know,
here's the other thing we haven't talked about.
What's that?
Which is not next year, starting in 2020.
They're going to change.
It's going to be earlier, which is going to have a big effect on you and me because so much of our episode schedule at the beginning of every year is about building up to the Oscars. And so if we're losing 3 weeks of that, we have to rearrange our entire yearly plan.
I don't like it.
I mean, actually kind of do like it.
I'm fine with it because this past season felt 1,000 years long.
Sure.
By the time the Oscars came around, I was like, no one say the word Three Billboards to me ever again. Like, I do not want to talk about this ever again. And it was like March 4th or something that were the Oscars this year. And I also saw on Twitter, you know, a couple guys saying that like now Sundance is going to be a campaign stop. And I'm just like, oh God, I don't want to. I mean, fine, whatever. Sundance can you know do whatever they want, but I just feel
what would they do at Sundance?
I don't know. I was tweeting with Greg Elwood, and he was like, "Oh, they'll have like panels and stuff."
Okay,
well, I'm like, right? And it's like, well, I'd rather hear about the movies that are playing at Sundance, the new movies, instead of the movies that came out a year ago or 6 months ago.
Yeah. It feels like by the time Sundance rolls around, like. I feel like everybody's already kind of aware of these movies.
Right.
But I mean, the Academy themselves don't vote until ridiculously close to the Oscars.
Yeah.
It's like less than a week before the Oscars the votes are due. It's pretty crazy.
But the nominees are already due.
You're right.
Yeah.
But the final votes.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm going to agree with you and disagree with you on your general outlook, Katie.
Okay.
In that I also think I don't take the Oscars seriously as awards of merit at all.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was saying before, I'd be fine not watching them anymore. But award season itself, I love it.
It is fun.
Stretch it to 8-9 months. I love it. I crave it when it's not award season because I feel like here's the thing. I am with like normal people who aren't like movie people all the time. I'm very not good at talking about anything other than movies.
Right.
And what about the big game? You could always talk about the big game.
Sure. Sport.
And so when it's award season, it's like mainstream a little bit to be like, so what movies have you seen recently? It's like what I talk about with my family during award season.
Mm-hmm.
And like people who don't normally think about movies 24 hours a day are now thinking about movies, you know, maybe 2 hours a day or whatever.
Maybe. And that's while they're watching a movie.
But I really, really enjoy the fanfare of award season. And I'll say, you know, selfishly, that's changed as I've gotten more access to the awards. Yeah.
It is really fun
stuff. Yeah.
But I think what bothers me a little bit about award season is like the statistification of it and people being like, well, only two movies have won the PGA have also gone on to win the Mobile.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, like stop doing this. Like it's just trying to predict things, like trying to read the tea leaves of like unpredictable guild members. I'm like, what are you doing?
Like, but what's, it sounds to me like you need to join a fantasy awards league like we have.
This is what we do. Instead of fantasy sports every year, we and our friends, do a fantasy award season where you pick a movie or an actor or a cinematographer per category, and then over the course of the season for the different guild awards or critics awards and leading up to the Golden Globes and the Oscars and whatever, we get points for each one. If you at home would like to start your own fantasy awards league, there's a whole page for it on the website. You'll see it. It's called Fantasy Awards League, I think.
Yeah.
It's at the top of the homepage. Click on it and you can download the materials, spreadsheets and the rules.
Yeah.
And you know,
there's no rule on when you need to start yours.
Yeah.
You could start it right now.
And if you do that, you know, all that stuff's available to download for free. If you do, maybe drop a few bucks in the donate button because Tyler and Scott put a lot of time into creating this thing. Anyway, thank you for giving us that entree to plug our thing.
Yeah. I did do a fantasy Oscar thing once, but it was literally like the day of the Oscars.
Right.
I also like had no idea how to pick. I was like, I don't understand the rules, but now I get it.
But that's what's I like all the prognosticating in the same reason that I love listening to preseason NHL predictions. Like, oh, here's who's going to make the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's like, that's 7 months away. You have no fucking clue. And that's what's fun about it is seeing people be wrong.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
The whole La La Land Moonlight thing, I know some people are like, oh, that's a scar on the
sanctity. Amazing.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Even though I was Team La La Land, I loved Moonlight too. So yeah. I wasn't.
Everybody upset at all. Was a winner that year.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
Yeah, and also, it brought some excitement to the show.
Yeah.
And I felt like last year's Oscars were very boring because we knew, because of the prognostication and stuff, we knew who all the acting winners were going to be.
Yeah,
and I think
was
the
not
only
a single surprise.
The only toss up was Best Picture, and then like it wasn't that surprising when it went to Shape of Water. So, But yeah, you know, it's like we need some like some lifeblood.
I'll say, yeah, by that time it wasn't surprising if you had told anyone 2 years ago Guillermo del Toro is going to make an R-rated movie about Sally Hawkins having sex with a fish man and it's going to win Best Picture.
Yeah,
that would have been surprising.
That would have been surprising. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and then and for us to be like, it's the safe choice.
Yeah. It's like, oh, and by the way, there will also be a film about Winston Churchill that is nominated. It will not win.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and so, and we're bouncing around a little bit because talking about the Oscars is so is fascinating to me because in talking about it, we almost always wind up talking about, like, who gives a shit?
Right.
You know? And I care about them in so far as... You know, I in the same way that I care about, like, you know, the AFI list when they made it in 1998, as a 16-year-old, like, it gave me something. It gave me something to go on as I was learning about movies. And when you go and look at the movies that were nominated for Best Picture or whatever it is, like, I'm thinking about the 17-year-olds right now who are just learning about how to find good movies, and the Academy just saying these are the best movies, even if they're not, it is a list to go from.
Yeah.
And so now when they come up with best popular film, will that I'm you know, probably clutching my pearls a bit, but the idea that, like, will this 17-year-old look at these two lists of best picture nominees and say, like, oh, well, they're all the same. I already saw all these. I already saw Black Panther and Mission Impossible or whatever is going to be there. I saw those, so why should I bother seeing these other ones? Like, not to imply that one is necessarily worse or better, but some people are going to see anyway, and the others, I feel like the Oscars kind of spur them on to see just a little bit, but it might not.
I don't think it'll have that much of an effect, because, like, I think, like I said, people who aren't going to watch the Oscars still aren't going to watch the Oscars, and the kind of people, the kind of young kids who are going to seek out good movies are still going to seek out good movies. They're not going to stop, after Marvel, unless they were already going to do that. My worry with the thing is, if there is a very popular effects heavy blockbuster summer movie that is also very good and a legit contender, you know, like, I mean, it wasn't nominated last year, but if Wonder Woman had won Best Picture last year, I wouldn't have complained.
Oh, for sure.
Wonder Woman was great. But now, if there's a Wonder Woman or whatever, is the Academy going to say, well, we'll give it this?
Or will a Mad Max Fury Road
be
shunted off into a Best Popular category?
Which is interesting, because that movie didn't make that much money, really.
Right.
Certainly compared to, like, Marvel films.
Right.
Okay.
And so, they might just view in the same way that, like, you know, the Independent Spirit Awards, it's like whatever. It's like, oh, if it has a budget of less than $40 million, right, or I think it's like less than $26 million, it's just like,
how the indie spirits are awarding everything that then goes on to win Best Picture in the past couple years, like Spotlight and all those.
And so I do think that there's, I guess there is the possibility of, for lack of a better term, ghettoization, like,
right.
You know,
when Quentin Tarantino used that word at the Oscars, Jamie Foxx got mad at him.
Well,
do you remember that? We talked about it in the podcast.
Sort of like, it's like category fraud, you know, when they're like, oh, Viola Davis is a supporting actress in Fences. And it's like, no, she's like in every single scene of that movie. And that's complete category fraud, because they just put her forth as supporting, because they knew she would win.
Right.
But you know, it's sort of like, okay, is that going to be an issue now with the studios? Like, what are they going to put for? Like, is this a best picture for your consideration, or best popular, you know, movie for your consideration? Like, how is all that going to work? Like, the economy of awards campaigning is a huge economy. And, like, I think when you live in LA, even more than in New York and you start to like see some of it a little bit, you're just like, oh my God, like this is a huge $1 million industry of events and screeners. And, you know, the people who are in the guilds are like constantly getting these like receptions and screenings and all this stuff. It's like crazy. It's every single day. So, and you know, they're according to HFPA and they're, it's everything. And, you know, I was thinking about it as I was coming over here. I'm like, has anyone ever won an award who didn't like make the rounds and shake the hands and like
Monique.
Oh, she didn't. Okay. Yeah,
and
okay.
She mentioned it in her Oscar speech.
Yeah. I think I was like, I knew there was someone and I couldn't remember who it was, but yeah, that's interesting, you know, to,
yeah.
Cause you gotta press the flesh.
But, yeah. But that's the other thing is like, if you're too obvious about it, people think it's bad.
Like you're thirsty.
Leo. Yeah. What did you say?
I just said thirsty.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like Melissa Leo was nominated for and won supporting actress for The Fighter.
But she got raked over the coals in the press for how much she wanted it.
Yeah. I guess. Well, I mean, you've seen her. For your consideration, Ed, that she printed herself. Yes. I don't know if that was for The Fighter. It might have been for something else, but
I kind of love that. I think it's like
consider.
Yeah,
but it was the one. She's leaning forward in a low cut dress and like with her arms up like this. Like
it's like, wait, what is this?
What am I supposed to be considering?
Are you opening up a brothel? Yeah. But as I was looking up whether or not Inside Out was nominated for Best Picture. This article mentioned that after Beauty and the Beast was nominated for Best Picture, there was no animated film category at the time. Animated film came about in 2001, I believe. And so this article said that since the inception of the animated film category, only two animated films have also been up for picture. And that was Up and Toy Story 3. That's 2009, which is the first year that they implemented the 10 movie slot thing, and 2010. Yeah. So literally they did it the first 2 years, and then suddenly it's like, okay. So even when they're trying to do that,
finds its level. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And I feel like that's what'll happen with this. And so I do think that there's, you know, an argument could be made if Dunkirk, which did make a lot of money, if that would be, is it possible to be nominated for both? Is it possible to win both?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
It should be.
Yeah.
And I think, or if Get Out last year, what I think they should do, if the Academy is listening, is not have Academy voters vote either on nominations or for a winner for this category. What they should do is they should take the nominations for Best Picture and then the ones that are among those nominations that meet the box office or budget criteria for Best Popular Picture, they get put off of that. But the Academy is still just nominating for Best Picture. I think they should do that for Picture, Best Picture, or Picture, Popular Picture, Animation, Documentary. Yeah. It should all be one Best Picture, and then they filter out the results based on that so that people can't do that, I guess.
The downside is that in previous years, it could be that, okay, there is one nominee for Popular Picture because it's the only one that made over a certain
amount
of money.
That's true. Like, it would be like that. running, you know, like when you're running unopposed.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying, but I don't know how many.
It's rarer than
in the nomination process.
Mm-hmm.
How many does each voter submit 10?
And it's ranked. I don't think you have to submit 10.
Okay.
I don't know. I've never seen the ballot, but I know it's like a ranked, like a weighted vote, like a ranked thing. And then it comes out. It's like the mat. If you get over a certain amount of points.
Okay.
You get to be nominated. That's why it's like, we don't know the number, what the number is going to be. It's not like a set number.
Okay. So that's what I'm saying. It's like almost like, the Village Voice Film Critics poll at the end of every year gives like the winners, but then you can also click on the page that it's like, here's every single movie that anyone, even one person nominated and how many things it got.
Sure.
Break out that list for Best Picture and then whatever the top five are that meet the best popular picture category could go into that category. And they can also still be nominated for Best Picture if they also got that amount. Because I guarantee there were at least a handful of people who nominated Wonder Woman last year.
Probably.
Yeah.
Like, so that's what I'm saying. Even if only three people, it goes on the list.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, I think that this just illustrates that, like, the fact that we don't know how this is going to be implemented is, like,
yeah,
so crazy. And I feel like they're going to, you know, in 2 months, they'll be like, my bad.
I Whoops. Do wonder if it's going to stick around.
Yeah. There's yeah, been probably. So much backlash. I feel like there's been, like, one or two people who have defended it.
There was part of me was wondering if the episode we're doing right now is a bad idea because is this still going to be in effect when this goes up on Sunday? Monday, pardon me.
Monday is officially our release day.
Yeah.
If you get our episodes on a Sunday, it's because I got around to it, but I don't want to start promising people episodes on Sunday.
Sorry.
Monday. I'll tell you what my wife said last night when I was like, did you hear about the new Academy rules? And she's like, yeah, just when I was happy about them letting in all these women and minorities, now they had to go and make it shitty.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and I think that's like a good change that they're implementing, and that needs to be a change that's coming. And like, it's like, okay, one step forward, one step back, like,
yeah,
you know, and it really does feel like a very corporate-y influence decision. That's when I'm like, okay, ABC was giving them guff about it. And
yeah,
I don't see how it's going to bring any more viewers.
That's what I was going to say, is like, we're speculating on the impact that it is going to have on the Oscars. But the one thing we can guarantee it won't do is have the intended effect of bringing in more people. I don't think people give a shit anymore. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what they should do is, ABC should just air the Oscars on one of the cable channels they own and air a block of new Last Man Standing episodes or whatever on ABC that night. And they'll get, if the problem is just ratings, then let the ceremony be what it is and just move it to a station where the expectations are lower.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
So I was going to ask you, David, as someone who, by your own admission, and I'm kind of in the same camp, but we'll get to me in a moment. So you said that if it weren't a thing that you and your wife could enjoy watching together, if you just lived by yourself, if she came to her senses and said, I'm leaving.
Yeah, it's like how we... Yeah, I see what you're saying there.
There we go.
It's like how Natalie and I finished the second season of Unreal, because we were just like, well, we're in it. even though it... Unreal had, I don't know if you watched Unreal.
I watched the first season. I watched a couple episodes of the second season and then bailed.
Even the first season, like, Unreal had 5 or 6 great episodes that fooled everyone into thinking it had a great first season. Mm-hmm. But it really, the decline happened like halfway through the first season. And then I watched the whole second season and it was just a disaster. My wife watched the third season. I bailed on that one. Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry, to go back to your question.
So...
But that group sense, or that like partner sense, like, I only watch The Bachelor or The Bachelorette when I'm like at a watch party. I don't watch it at home because I don't have 2 hours to kill more brain cells. Right,
yeah. So long.
I would probably still watch Survivor if my wife didn't watch it with me, but it's definitely a thing that we enjoy watching together. And so the question is, why, given what we all do and the circles that we run in and that sort of thing, you don't even necessarily feel, putting aside any concept of obligation, you don't even feel an obligation within yourself to watch the Oscars. Like, when did it start losing you and why?
When did it start losing? Well, I mean, I think there's not a hard break. It's gradual. I've always tried to continue to grow as a cinephile, I guess. And I think... The further and further my own personal top 10 list got year by year from the movies that were being nominated, I think I came to lose a little interest. I guess if I 2007 was a watershed year for me because wait, is it 2007? No, 2009. Is the year that Public Enemies came out, and I thought it was one of the best movies of the year. And not only did the Academy not agree, most of my fellow film lovers did not agree. And so I do, if I have to point to anything, I'll say 2009 is a year that I had a big sort of realization of, like, I don't think I value what the Academy values.
Sure.
But it's just been a gradual thing.
Yeah.
And I'm getting older. Like, I, you know,
we don't have much time left.
Yeah.
Literally, especially with climate change and all that. We got like 10 years, so I got 10 more Sundays left.
Oscar Sundays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to... I'll spend them doing what I want, which is... probably watching other movies.
Yes.
But, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think once you do sort of realize, like, the machine, like, you start to see the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, and you realize that it's not about really merit or any, you know, it's not that it's not about merit, because every movie, for the most part, is deserving to be recognized. But when you're just like, okay, this person was not nominated, and that was the best performance of the year, in my opinion, and, like, they totally ignored it, or they didn't even watch it, or they didn't get it. Yeah. I think you start to see, like, okay, it's not... It's about all of these other forces, which are advertising and release dates and how many screeners they sent out and what day they sent out the screeners. And, you know, once you sort of, like, understand the process a little bit more, you start to get a little cynical. But I don't think, but that's me. That's not like people who are just watching the show. So I don't honestly know how they can fix it. Like, I just don't think people are watching event television in the same way if it's not Super Bowl.
If it's not the Super Bowl. Yeah. So I think that's, they're trying to fix a problem that can't be fixed. But before you finish, I want to again address, when I talk about not caring about, like, not wanting to watch the Oscars, there's a difference for me, between the ceremony, which I don't care that much about, and the campaigning and all the stuff.
The anticipation.
Which I really like. Yeah. I know you hate it, but
I don't hate it. I just get sick of it. And all the like stat stuff kind of annoys me, but maybe that's just me personally. But I mean, I enjoy, you know, the other award shows and, like, when the, you know, and National Board of Reviews awards, or, you know, I got to do the LA Film Critics Awards last year. And so that was fun. So it's like anytime, all those things are fun. The lead up to it is fun to see what they award. But, I don't know. I actually went to the Oscars last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was covering it for the Tribune. So I wasn't in the room where it happens. I was in the, like, press conference room, which is, like, backstage in this, like, weird hotel area. And where they go and they do their Q&As afterwards. So that was interesting. And it is, you know, there is a certain element of, like, obligation to keep up with things, I think, because of my job. And I'm like, well, I better see these things, 'cause I'm going to have to have an opinion on them. Right. And, you know, but it was cool to go to the, I don't know. It was cool to go, but I was working literally for like 10 hours straight, and I wasn't like partying.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, so it was trippy and surreal.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I would keep watching. I do enjoy some of the, you know, when you see like a really good speech from someone and it really means something, like, as much as I did not like Three Billboards, I enjoyed Sam Rockwell's speech. You know, it partially because it was just so very him, and so moments like that are a lot of fun, and some of the comedy bits are enjoyable. And then I'm just kind of interested in the event on principle.
Right.
That, okay, this is... So for my other podcast, for the last several years, we've done a mini-sode series about the movies that have won Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And we're all the way back to 1948 at this point. And it is definitely interesting to see that, all right, this is what the Academy, for whatever reason, it could be marketing reasons, you know, this is what the Academy thought was the best movie, and looking at the nominees, these are the five that they thought were the best. And isn't it so interesting that movies like The Searchers and Vertigo were Singing in the Rain were, like, not even close to being nominated, but these other movies that have completely fallen off since then were, you know, stuff like that is interesting. And so to be in it and think, like, okay, the Academy picked Shape of Water. Will anybody be talking about Shape of Water in 10 years? I don't know. And I enjoy that.
Yeah.
But I also, when watching it, I usually have, you know, some friends over. I find I'm up and about a lot.
Yeah.
Like, because the awkwardness of some speeches and just the live event and moments like that, I was like, ugh, this is uncomfortable. Yeah. I have a hard time watching it. And so I'll just be like, hey, does anybody want anything? I'm going to the kitchen. So
gotta get more pigs in blankets.
Exactly. I cook so many. so here's my question. So In the circles that I not necessarily run in, but that I'm curious about, which is to say politically more conservative, they certainly have a lot of theories as to why people don't watch the Oscars anymore. In fact,
Those are reverse engineered theories.
Oh, undoubtedly.
Yeah,
undoubtedly.
They're wrong.
But it's this idea that...
conservatives are wrong about most things.
Except economics. It's the frustrating thing. Look, when you run a business...
It's not working great.
What was that?
Well, it's not working great, and government's not a business. Not supposed to be run like a business. The aim of a government is different than the aim of a business.
No, I understand that. So they should maybe stop telling businesses what to do.
They need to tell businesses what to do because government's job is to protect the governed, and business's job is to
exploit the
destroy
governed.
Humanity. Business, by its very nature, is anti-humane.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and that works for a lot of people. Competition seems to work for a lot of us, but in order for it to work in a way that doesn't literally end life on Earth, we need it to be very, very heavy regulated by the government.
To keep the
game going, as opposed to let there be a winner and a loser, which is why we have historic income inequality right now, is because there's not enough regulation, and we are getting toward a place where there is a winner and a loser, and that's not what we want. That's not sustainable. That's a short-term goal, like a virus that eats through a person with no knowledge of the fact that once the person is dead, the virus doesn't have anything to live off of.
Yeah.
First off, I love that metaphor, even if I don't agree with it. But I am going to move on because quickly this is I don't want to head down this path. But what I will say is that it is interesting. I wrote there were some conservatives that wrote, commentators that wrote about the Emmys, and so I wrote a bit. One of my little news things, whatever you want to call them. One of my Tyler's takes, as you say.
Tyler's takes. Battleshippretention.com. Famous column. You're on the side of buses like Carrie Bradshaw.
Yeah, it shows up every, I don't know, 2 months at this point.
I couldn't help but wonder.
I just can't make enough puns. And so they said, like, you know, viewers don't want to watch just a bunch of, you know, when you consider that like half the country has this particular political belief, they don't want to tune in to watch a lot of people just tell them that they're wrong and that they're immoral and all these types of things. And I was like, well, okay, that might be true, but I don't think that's what, I think you're wrong. I don't think that's why people are tuning out of the Oscars or the Emmys or whatever. My view, that could play a role for certain people, but they probably weren't going to watch that much anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that there's the instance of, like you said, in the modern day, like
people just
people watch things differently.
Right.
Than they used
like
to.
TV watching is just different. People are watching stuff on DVR. They're watching, you know, at time shifted. They're watching on Netflix. Like they don't have, some people don't have cable. I don't have cable right now. So like, you know, it's just, if people don't have cable, are they streaming it? Are they slingboxing it? Are they whatever they're doing to get the show to watch it together? And it's also a group viewing exercise. Mm-hmm. So people are going to go to a party or they're going to do that. So it's like, then you have one TV that's playing true. To 20 people.
Yeah.
But, so I just think that like the obsession with Nielsen ratings is like very archaic.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I, you know, obviously that's how they make money through advertising and, you know, but like the Oscar ads are never going to be like Super Bowl ads.
And I do think that when it comes right down to it, like I can't speak to this specifically, but I feel like people probably used to watch the Oscars because it was an opportunity to see their favorite celebrities. But now you can see your celebrities everywhere all the time on social media, on any number of talk shows. Like this is not that exciting anymore. It's like, well, I guess now you can see a number of people, they watch for the fashion.
Sure.
Yeah. That's something they can't see elsewhere. And it's really just, I care less about the star wearing the dress than I do the dress itself. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be a very small subset as well.
Yeah, I think they just need to target, and maybe putting it on a cable network is the way to go. But like just being like, okay, there's a group of people who are into movies. We're not going to be all things to all people, but we are going to be very specific thing to some people. Mm-hmm. And maybe just accepting that fact, but I don't think being like, we're going to give a best Oscar movie to a best Oscar movie, a best popular movie Oscar to like Skyscraper is going to like work.
Yeah. If this actually carries through all the way to this year's Oscars, which it could not, there is a lot of blowback, but I guess it might not matter. I'm interested to see how it's going to turn out. And
so what happens first? Disney hires back James Gunn, or they get rid of the best popular picture category? I don't know. The Wall Street is there not hiring him back.
Going back to the Disney thing, like, I've been dismayed by their... I'm going to get myself in trouble. But I have been dismayed by their... their modus operandi. They seem to be very reactionary, mm-hmm. very like, oh my God, we have to fix this thing. So do that. And like getting baited by right-wing trolls. That guy is just a dick. And he's a bad person. Like the guy who was digging up the old tweets, Cernovich. And, you know, it's just like, don't react to that stuff. And don't like think about it. And even last year, they banned the LA Times from reviewing their movies, which only affected Thor Ragnarok. But because the LA Times wrote an article about the city of Anaheim. Yeah. And how they've been totally fucked over by the park. And, you know, it's like everything is very reactionary. We're going to react to this. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. But there's such a huge company and they own Fox now that it's like has these like seismic shifts. So they're like, the Oscars didn't have enough ratings. So do this thing. And it's like, you didn't think through, like, what is this? So it's just very like not thought out, very reactionary, very like trying to put a Band-Aid on very something.
Trumpy. Very Trumpian.
Yeah, like the James Gunn thing. It's like, I don't know. I all of these like sort of rash decisions that they're making, I don't feel great about it. And like they own so many things now that I'm just like, well, that's awesome.
I was watching an episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with, I wasn't watching it with Neil Brennan. I was, but we were watching his episode. And he said, they were talking about the concept of like this reaction attitude and that people jump on it so quick. And he said anytime the way I feel, whether it be something that I do or something someone else does, part of me is like, I'm going to give it a month.
Yeah.
And if I'm still angry after a month, you know what? I'm going to let this person have it. And it's whether it be the James Gunn thing or whatever, like
take a breath.
Yeah. Just let it
sleep on it for a night.
And I think it's the attitude of like, well, we got to get in the case of like something that could be offensive.
Right.
It's like we need to get ahead of this. Like we need to anticipate people's anger.
Right.
And we will show that we're right there with them before they even know it. And then with the James Gunn thing, there's like, oh, we miscalculated on this one. Turns out most people are with him.
Right. I think they thought that I have no idea what their thinking was, but I think they probably thought the James Gunn thing was going to turn into like a Me Too moment. Sure. And, you know, his tweets are bad. Mm-hmm. Like most people's tweets in 2009 were.
Yeah.
Like I'm not like trying to defend the tweets. They're not great tweets, Bob, but they're, you know, it's like it in the grand scheme of things, it's like the backlash is worse. I mean, who wants Dave Bautista on their bad side?
Yeah, I know. Right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as far as, and David, I think you were talking about this with just their own expectations for the Oscars, like acknowledge that the Oscars are not going to bring in the crazy amount of viewers that you seem to want them to, and just be like, all right, it's one night a year.
Right.
And there's a larger tradition than just ABC or Disney.
Yeah.
There's just, this is what the Oscars are. We're going to have to eat this one. but it's just one.
Yeah, or just you own FX now. Air it on FX.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, you know, it's like the Oscars have changed.
Or FXX. Sorry.
Throughout, yeah, air it on FX. I think that's hilarious.
Or ESPN.
Right. Right next to a Simpsons marathon, just rolling to the red carpet. On ESPN. That would be amazing, like sports commentary. Okay. Yeah. We're getting some good ideas here, guys. Like, let's keep going. You know, it's like it used to be like just a dinner where they would like roast each other and give out awards, and yeah, it wasn't on TV, and then it turned into this whole big thing. And now I think it's like very self-serious, and I mean, yeah, it's a huge, huge, huge industry, but because they are literally televising giant advertisements for their movies. And every time Frances McDormand gets up there, someone goes, oh, I guess I'll see three billboards. I don't know if that actually translates. I think it does, though. Someone told me at a studio that it actually, yeah, translates. And I've heard that, like, in contract, my friend is a screenwriter, and divulging all the secrets. In her contract, it says she gets a bonus if she gets nominated for an award. Did you know that? That screenwriters get bonuses?
That's great.
I'm like, oh, all right. Or, you know, whoever gets a bonus if it gets nominated for an award. I'm like, that's pretty good. But totally lost my train of thought. I just think that it can change. It doesn't have to be the huge behemoth that it has been for the past couple decades. Like, maybe it can scale down. Maybe it can, you know, it is riding this huge industry, but I don't know. Maybe it can be on a different network, or like not get like, yeah, be more niche, but
yeah, or they could go. I mean, I don't know, but I don't know. I would love this. They could go back to Monday nights, which
yeah, that's true.
Is what it used to be. It hasn't been on Sundays for nearly as long as you'd think.
It's been what, like 15 years?
I thought it was more than 20. I thought it was a 90, like, okay, 90s. But yeah, it was on Mondays
the 90s,
forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember the 90s. That's a VH1 show.
I don't even remember the Monday nights.
Yeah, and then the Emmys went to Monday and then went back. But just like 2 years ago, the Emmys were on a Monday night.
Mm.
So do Mondays, or do the cable network, or... yeah, I like that you got into some Oscar history with it being in the just a dinner.
It just started out as like a fun thing for people to get together. I mean, because it was like a small business.
And it was at the Roosevelt Hotel.
Yeah. And they would just be like, huh, you get an award. Lubitsch.
And then do you know where the PricewaterhouseCoopers thing started? Because of you guys at the LA Times fucking up. Because the...
not my fault.
The Academy used to give the press the winners beforehand with an embargo.
Oh.
And the LA Times ran the winners.
Oh, my God.
And so people, like, stars, like, didn't show up because they read in the paper, like, wow, oh, I guess I didn't win. And so that's why...
Never mind.
That's why in the early 30s or whatever... they started doing the super secret thing, and PricewaterhouseCoopers has been a part of the Academy almost from the beginning of the Oscars,
and they were nailing it
up until that dude had to take selfies with whoever was back there at the time.
Yeah. He's just like, take this one, whatever. Yeah. I don't care.
But you know, and so okay, let's. That was such a wonderful, crazy. I'm sure it wasn't wonderful for the producers of La La Land, but it was amazing
anytime
moment.
You get on Faye Dunaway's bad side, it's not a good not a good situation for you in Hollywood.
But so like, it was this crazy moment, and then the next year when they brought Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway back out to present Best Picture, and everybody knew why, and it was funny, but it was also kind of touching. It was the Oscars saying, like, we're not really blaming these two here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we don't like the idea of them being thought of as jokes. Like, we want to pay these two respect. And I remember just little moments like that. I was like, oh, Oscars are neat.
Special moments where it still has the magic, where you're like, you know, just a well-placed montage.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. The In Memoriam, it does get me more than it probably should.
Yeah.
Look, I'm old-fashioned. I think they should go back to letting people clap during the In Memoriam.
I agree.
It's weirder to me that it's quiet.
I also like to see who gets the most clapping.
That's morbid, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw like Kyle Buchanan had some funny hot takes about this whole situation on Vulture. And
I read that too, and I already forgot.
Well, like he had, I didn't even read it. I just like saw the tweet. It was like, the Oscars should be long. And it was like, Kyle being like, we wait all year for this. Like, let them be as long as possible. And like, I don't know if I'm going to die on that hill, but I mean,
and it's also easier for us to say out here on the West Coast where the Oscars start at 5, as opposed to in on the East Coast where they don't start till after 8.
Yeah.
And so a 4-hour long Oscars means it's literally the next day when it ends.
Is it weird that people always make a joke about how long the Oscars are. They never feel long to me.
Oh no, not to me.
It always like flies by.
Yeah, but that's just.
But that's because we're true of most nerds. People.
Yeah. Whereas the Grammys feel interminable to me.
How long are the Grammys? I haven't watched the Grammys in years.
I watched them. I think the first time James Corden hosted, I watched them at a bar while I was on vacation. My wife and I had gone out of town for like, it was like Valentine's Day weekend. And we watched, we got drunk and watched the Grammys at a bar for Valentine's Day. You're like, Day.
Vacation.
Like. Yeah.
Okay. So this actually brings up a question. I've never watched the Grammys in my life, but I do know that there are a lot of categories. Are all of them?
No.
Televised? Almost none of them are televised because the Grammys have become at this point
just a concert.
Yes. Okay. It's more about live performances than anything, and they give out a few of the big ones. But yeah, there are like 100 something Grammys.
Yeah.
They couldn't give out all of them.
Do they do little montages of like, here's where we gave out all the Latin Grammys?
I don't remember if they, maybe they do. I can't even remember that far. But yeah, I've watched the Grammys a couple times, including I was watching when Soy Bomb happened. Do you remember Soy Bomb?
Yeah.
I forget his name now. Michael Portnoy or something like that.
Yeah.
He was like a New York experimental artist and came to the Grammys just to run across the stage with Soy Bomb written on his chest. And I was watching live when it happened.
That's exciting.
That's like, awesome.
Yeah.
The reason that I ask is because I remember the Tom Waits album Mule Variations won Best Contemporary Folk Album, and I wasn't watching the Grammys. That's just a thing that I looked up, and when I saw that, I was like, "Do they have non-contemporary folk? Like old school folk as well? How many folk categories are there?"
Right.
And then I thought, "How many categories are there?" And so, you know, the Grammys don't air everything.
No.
Of course, there's a difference between hundreds and 24 categories for the Oscars.
Do you know this is a very well-known bit of trivia. Jimmy Pardo would make fun of me even calling it trivia. Sure. But do you know who won the first Best Heavy Metal Album award?
Who's that?
The Grammys clearly hadn't figured out what heavy metal was. Jethro Tull.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I have heard that. Yeah. That's amazing.
And along those lines, speaking of Tom Waits, his album Bone Machine won the Grammy for Best Alternative. Because at the time, alternative literally just meant, we don't know.
Sure.
We don't know where this goes.
The Grammys are like even more out of touch. Or I don't know. I feel like the Emmys and the Grammys are like even more out of touch than the Oscars, the Academy.
But has the, and I don't really watch the Emmys that regularly, but as television has become more and more like the Artie. Center of, intellectual pop culture conversation, has the Emmy Academy come around, do you think?
I mean, I think they've gotten better. I just remember there were, I don't really watch the Emmys all that much either, and I have basically given up on TV because there's just too much of it. I'm just going to rewatch Glow. Like I can't, I don't know what all these other shows are. I cannot keep up if I have to keep up with movies, I cannot keep up with TV. Like it's just impossible. Yeah. And I think it also depends on like where you focus your work. Like people write about TV, like they're all in on TV, but I am not writing about TV right now.
That means you don't have to do the TCAs, which sounds like a nightmare.
Oh God.
Cause it's fucking like 2 weeks long, twice a year.
So long. And I'm always like, how can I mute this hashtag?
Yeah.
It's like so-and-so's on stage saying that something's going to happen on their show. I'm like, oh my God. Like I mute so many TV writers on during TCA.
Yeah.
And it is twice a year.
Yeah. It's twice
a
year.
And there's upfronts.
It goes on forever.
What are the TCAs?
The Television Critics Association.
Oh, okay.
Basically upfronts. It's very similar to the upfronts, except they give awards at the end.
Literally 2 weeks of like press conferences where they just bring out people who are going to be on new shows and they just like have a panel and it goes on all day for 2 weeks.
Twice a year.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's it's like Fashion Week, except it's 2 weeks.
Yeah,
it's
I know. And they're all like, and by the end of it, like all the TV writers are like, I've been stuck in this conference room in this hotel forever. I don't know what's going on. Like, you know, I've lost all touch with the outside world.
Yeah. It's like following comics on Twitter during SF Sketchfest. That also goes on for, seems like, 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
It starts in February and ends in August or something. I don't know. It seems like, is SF Sketchfest still going on right now? It's interminable. But Tyler doesn't spend as much time on Twitter anymore, which is good.
Yeah,
I was just saying before you got here that I'm thinking about
quitting altogether.
Yeah. Well, I quit Instagram and Snapchat, and I don't have Facebook on my phone anymore. I use Facebook for event invites, and then the LA Online Film Critics Society, which I'm a part of, pretty much does all their communication through our Facebook
group. So
I keep that on my desktop, but not on my phone. Twitter's all I have left. I'm thinking about weaning myself off of it.
It's probably a good idea. I thought about doing a digital detox.
Yeah. But
I don't know.
It can be very helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I've quit. The funny thing about it, and this kind of ties into the award show thing, is like, I've quit Facebook for a couple years and then I'm back on and like barely go back on it anymore. I, you know, will take breaks from social media, and then you go back on and you're like, what did I miss? And you're like, nothing. None of this is important. Yeah. All of you are talking about the same stupid shit you were talking about 2 years ago, and it's not important, and why am I doing this again? And then every now and then you're like, oh, that person got married. That was me with Facebook. But like, you know, I have a feeling that if I like take a break from Twitter, I'll be like, I'm missing all the hot takes. And then I'll go back on and be like, no, it's not important. But yeah.
My main problem with Twitter, less secondary to how much, like, how fucking angry people are. That's secondary. All right.
Primary.
The primary one is Twitter has made people who aren't funny think that they're funny because there are essentially like a half dozen joke structures that float around.
Yes. Yeah,
and then everyone just plugs in their own thing. Yeah. So like one person makes one fun, like the That's Chappie tweet is one of the funniest things. The initial That's Chappie tweet is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
I've seen the joke structure, but I don't know what the first one is.
So the first one is just like, me leaning over and whispering to my girlfriend while we're watching Chappie the first time Chappie comes on screen. That's Chappie. It's one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
It's very funny.
But then every other variation on that
is not that funny.
Yeah, it's not that funny. There's another one that's like someone made a joke about pretending they'd read Catcher in the Rye, and it's the way he just catches all that rye. That's funny. There have been 200 variations on that tweet now that are terrible. And so, it's basically a lot of people who aren't funny who think they're funny because they've essentially downloaded a How to Be Funny starter kit and just like plugged in newer references.
I think what bothers me is the quote tweet games where it's like, name your fifth favorite horror movie ending that you've ever seen of all time. I'm like, who keeps this stuff in their head? And it's like, oh, well, definitely this. I'm like, I don't even know what movie I saw last week. Uh-huh. Like my memory is shot. Yeah. Like, who keeps this list in their head? Like, my top five favorite like heterosexual kisses in rom-coms. I'm like, what? I don't know. I'd have to spend hours researching that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I'm mostly with you. And then every once in a while, one will come up that I do have an opinion on. I'm like, click.
Yeah, no, I know when I have one, I'm like, I got it. Yeah. Yeah.
Basically on Facebook or Twitter, anytime it's just like favorite or like best movie villain. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to type in Noah Cross from Chinatown, and then I'm moving on.
Yeah.
And then I don't see whatever, but because I'll see enough to be like Darth Vader, Hannibal Lecter. Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
Helpful.
But what I was going to say about how this ties into award shows is that. Like, I have missed the Golden Globes a couple of times in the past couple years. Like a couple years ago I was on a plane and I was like, you know what, I'm really glad I'm missing all of Golden Globes Twitter and Golden Globes, because I'm on a plane, I don't need to participate in this at all. And then you kind of just realize like it seems so important to watch, and then you're like, oh, I didn't miss much.
Yeah, you can read who the winners are afterwards.
I can read who the winners are. I can watch all of the speeches online the next day. I don't have to sit through all the filler. I mean, maybe this is the issue, like that like people just want to say, oh, I just want to see the things that I want to see, and I can very easily get that in like bite-sized format right after the show. You can see all the dresses. You can see all the things that you need to see.
And ABC should be able to capitalize on that the way that late night hosts do by making viral. Like, they do a full episode and they break it down into viral pieces, and then those things get shared on YouTube, and there's ads on that or whatever. And the Oscars should just be able to capitalize on the same way.
You know,
here's the moments.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. It's something that I haven't thought about, is just the way, because I've been thinking in terms of the way people interact with social media and celebrities and stuff. But when it comes right down to it, people just watch things differently. The idea of appointment television doesn't really exist anymore unless it's something like the Super Bowl, which can't necessarily be broken down into segments. Like, you could be like, oh, here are some of the best plays, but there's a flow to it. Whereas the Oscars is just like, I heard about this. It's literally is categories.
You can
watch the ones you want.
Yeah.
And so, it's, When three people at this table aren't that interested in watching the Oscars, and we all should be.
My job.
They're not getting this back by saying, look at Black Panther. That's not going to work.
God, how do we fix it, guys? It's not our job.
I haven't quit watching the Oscars, but I did quit looking at Twitter during the Oscars years
ago. Oh my God. You are a smart man, because I used to live tweet the Oscars for the playlist. And
I used to do it for fun.
I would end up I'd be covered in sweat and covered in wine stains, and I'd be like, what happened? It would go by so quickly. I'd be I just blacked out, and I'm like, oh, I tweeted a bunch of stupid stuff about the Oscars, and now it's on a 40,000 account, follower account. I'm like, what am I doing? I would literally black out, and then I'd have to rewatch the show, cause I didn't remember anything.
I feel like for people doing what we do, I feel like there is a process, which is, I'm going to live tweet the Oscars while I watch the Oscars with friends, and then I'm going to record about the Oscars afterwards. And then just like, I can't tweet anymore. This is exhausting.
It is.
So I'll just look at other people's tweets. You know what? I'm not super into this anymore either. And there's all right, I'm just going to watch the ceremony with friends. Okay, you know what? I'm just going to watch it with my wife. You know what? I'm just going to watch a highlight reel afterwards. Yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
Well, we should all wrap this up.
And,
indeed.
Yeah. We got to keep this thing under 3 hours. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, you at home can find us at battleshipretention.com. That's where you can find all of the past Oscar episodes that we've done. And you can find, what's there this week. I've got, I reviewed, Black Klansman, and Josh reviewed Madeline. And
I reviewed
Reviewed the Meg, and I'm missing one, a new review from this week that I, Chase reviewed Skate Kitchen.
That's right.
That's all on the website. You can email us at david@battleshipretention.com or tyler@battleshipretention.com. You can follow me on Twitter, which I hate, at Davey Pretension. And you can follow Tyler on Twitter, which he hates, at Tyler Pretension. Real quick, your other podcast is called More Than One Lesson.
That's true. It is called that. And this week we've done an episode about the film I Can Only Imagine.
Uh-huh.
I reviewed that.
Yeah, I read your review afterwards. And I think I'm mostly with you.
Okay, good.
Katie, where can people find you on the internet?
Katie Walsh STX is my Twitter handle. That's where all the information is.
Yeah, and once again, I can't believe Tyler forgot about St. Croix.
That's okay.
It's in the Twitter.
Sorry.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But you know what? It's okay.
I don't follow a lot of people on Twitter.
Yeah. No, it's okay. You don't have to remember my bio.
Okay.
All right.
I will now, though.
Okay. Thank you. We shamed you.
Thank you at home for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.